Mr. Innes, real one. When and where were you born, Mr. Innes?
Born in Sunderland. You want the year?
The date of birth?
19th of October, 1918.
And what was your address? Whereabouts in Sunderland was it?
12 Beat Street, Roker, where I was born.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was a coal miner, but originally he'd been an iron moulder, but the work went out of fears, and he was unemployed during the Depression for about 5.5 years. It was a long depression. And he started work, he got this job as a miner at Weymouth Colliery through a friend. And he finished his time there till he retired.
Did your mother work?
No.
What family did they have?
I'm the only son.
What was the neighbourhood like that you were born into?
Well, it was quite a good neighbourhood, actually. Next door to me lived a pilot, and the councillor lived the next side. And there was a tugboat master. It was a fairly good area, I suppose, in those days.
And the house you lived in, could you describe it to me?
We were living as tenants on the upper floor. It was an ordinary terraced house, backyard, no bathroom, outside toilets. And that was it. In fact, it belonged to a councillor. And later on, Mother was looking for a house on her own to buy. So a house came up, 16 Westcott Terrace, Roker. So she'd already asked the owner of the house, Mr. Potts, the councillor, if he was prepared to sell. He said he was, but at a price. And I think the price was about £400. At any rate, Mother said, oh, I'm not prepared to pay that, because she had an uncle who that P and Lola belonged to. He was a joiner, and he'd had a look at the house, and he said, it's not worth it. He says, don't buy it. So she took his advice. Then this Westcott Terrace house came up, so they went there, and it was part occupied, which were quite common in those days. The rent of the part let off helped to pay the mortgage thing, you see. So the uncle had a look at that. He says, it's a good buy. It wants a bit doing to it, but we can fix that up. And it was for £300. So they bought the house. As soon as they bought the house, Mr. Potts, where they had living previously, he says, you can have the house for £350. She says, oh, it's too late now. So if we'd had that offer, we would have been there. But I always remember moving. We moved with a horse-drawn removal van. And I was 5, I think, at the time, and I was allowed to sit up with a driver and his mate. And I went round. It was only a matter of about 10 minutes for a horse. I still got the bill in the house somewhere. I think it cost £5 to move, and everything was itemised. The horse, how much it needed for feed, everything was on the bill. Total bill, £5. And we moved in, and the house, the upper flat where we went into, was in a dreadful state. The people in there hadn't been very clean. It had linoleum floors, and the children had been allowed to wet on the floor. And the smell was appalling, really. Because I didn't know, I was told this. And they said to her that to scrape the canvas up was stuck, scrub the floors to get the thing livable. And they were there for a while, and then the people downstairs moved out, and we got some new people in, because his father was unemployed then, you see. And I remember they applied for public assistance, and the public assistance man came and says, oh, you're not entitled. And I said, well, why is this? He says, well, how many in the family? One. He says, well, you've got 4 chairs round that table. You can sell one chair and you'll get some money. And, and the mother says, oh, well, don't bother. No, never bothered. Now, my uncle, he ran a chicken business by then. He'd been a carpenter in the shipyards joiner, and he started a poultry business, breeding chickens in incubators. And her mother went up there to help, and I think she got a little bit financial help, so it didn't require the public assistance money.
How bad did it get during those years when your father was off work?
Well, you didn't get burglaries. Everything seemed normal. Everybody was in the same boat. Probably they say, well, nobody had anything to steal, which probably didn't, so you couldn't steal anything. But it was very tight. I remember children picking up orange peel in the street and eating it. Orange peel. Somebody threw orange peel down, they'd eat it. So things were pretty bad that way. But then again, I suppose you had families on assistance and drinking problems, you know, and the money was going the wrong way, I don't know.
Did you get to the soup kitchens? Were you using soup kitchens?
No, they were there, but we never went. I could have went. We were fully entitled, apparently, but we were all right. We had this little bit of money from there. But I remember an interesting case lower down. A fella called Mr. Averin. I knew his son, who died quite young. I think he was only about 10 when the son died. I knew him quite well. At any rate, he won £350 on the football pools, which was a lot of money then. A lot of money. Was it 350? I think it might have been a bit more. At any rate, he was on public assistance. And the public assistance jumped on him, and he had to pay every penny back. It was only about 10 bob a week. He had to pay all that back. I said, we don't give you money to gamble with. That money's to live on. Any rate, he paid the money back, which wouldn't be much, and he got enough to buy a little cottage.
Did your father, had he served in the First World War, your father?
No, he was a voluntary aide. He was in the mines then, I think. I think the foundry had closed and he went into the mines. It was reserved occupation, but he was in the voluntary ambulance division, St. John. And he used to be called upon to massage the servicemen and work in the hospital. I have a medal. I've just sent it away to get cleaned up, actually. I'm going to get it done up. I found that in the drawer with that lot. So
this was a basic working class area that you lived in?
Yes, yes.
And you've intimated that the neighbours were pretty honest.
Yes. Well, when we moved to Westcott Terrace, it was a little block on its own with 24 houses. On the opposite side were some very old tenements up and down, two and three rooms. And you had four whole families in there, five living in two rooms, and outside toilets with some middens, actually. You know, they used to come and empty them. Things were pretty rough. But there didn't seem to be any great disease about it, you know. They say now we've become too clean. We've damaged our immune system. Doesn't get a chance to work. Everything's too clean. Well, there might be something in that. I don't.
So your family did have its periods of struggle to keep...
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Well, as a child, I wouldn't fully realise how much the problem was. I always had shoes on my feet where other children went to school barefoot. Because I was in class one time and the school teacher brought it up. And he says, can anybody get money? Ask your daddy for some money so we can put some shoes on this little boy. And they got him a pair of shoes. You see, that's how bad it could be. And his father had been killed in the war and he only had his mother. And I think there was another boy. But the other boy must have been younger. He wasn't in our class.
Was there much violence amongst people in those
Never
days?
Heard of any. No. No. Everything went at a very... And to show the bonding of the people in the street, when there was a funeral, was horse-drawn hearse and probably one cab. But all the street used to walk behind to the cemetery. That was always done. If you didn't know them, they always joined in this procession and marched to the cemetery. That's all gone. And in the street, if a coffin passed, everybody stood. Gentlemen took the hat off. All gone. Everything went at a leisurely pace. Now they rush them to the creme, you know, in a rocket if they could get one, probably.
Did the church or chapel play a role in your lives?
Well, I went to St. Aidan's Sunday School, which wasn't very far away. And I think everybody went to Sunday School there. All children went. It was quite a big attendance. And I attended that when I was about 15. I was actually working. Because they had an older division. And the solicitor, Mr. Hope, he used to take the senior boys and talk to them on different subjects.
And your parents, they went to church, did they?
No. No. I can never mind them going to church.
But they ensured their children went, or in your
That's right.
their
yes.
child went.
I suppose they did in their childhood. You know, it was the done thing. And because that was a Christian church, you know, St. Aidan's. And the Catholic boys, they had another similar setup.
Did you join the Boy Scouts or the Boys Brigade?
No, I was never in any of them. I think I was a bit of a loner. They say one only children become loners, but become very learned because they're usually with their parents. And wherever they go, they're with the parents and they learn a lot. They get more advanced than the others that's running loose, you know. So there might be something in this, I don't know. But I had a very sheltered life, really.
What games did you get up to as a small child?
Oh, there was seasons. There was round about Easter, the tops and whips used to come out. And as it moved on to winter, there was marbles you played in the streets, you know. And Monty Kitty, that was a game. And the girls played hopscotch and skippies and trying to think of other games.
Where did you play?
In the streets. There was no playing fields near. We just played in the streets. And hidey games, you know. You hid behind a brick wall and they tried to find you and all this. But they were seasonable.
Discipline in your family, who was the one that kept you in check?
Mother. Definitely. Father didn't seem to have a lot of interest. She used to ask him to check me if things got out of hand. She said, you'll have to deal with him. And he would say, no, don't do that again. That was it. And there wasn't the bonding between father and son which you see today. We never seemed to correspond. He came, went to work, come back, and that was it. When I started to serve my time, I think it got a bit more communal. You know, I used to talk more about work and things.
At what age did you start school?
I think it would be 5. That was the starting age then.
And which school did you start?
Redby.
Memories of school, what have you?
Very little. I know I was taken to school by the son of the pilot next door, Mr. Rush. His son, Ronnie, he used to take me to school. He went to the same school, only a bigger class, of course.
And this was an infant school, was it?
Infant school, yes.
And after whatever, 8, 6, 7, you moved to the junior? What?
Was all in the one school.
It was
graded
school.
Off.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was one of the best schools of its time because it had a laboratory. None of the other schools had. It's been pulled down since.
Did you have to pass examinations, tests in school?
Yes, they did 11, like 11 plus. You either went to the, if you got certain marks, you went to the junior tech. If you got higher marks, you went to the BEED, which was a bit of a grammar school. It was like 2 grades.
Where did you move to?
I stopped in that school. I wasn't bright enough. But actually, you know, I talked about being reserved. Actually didn't want to leave the school. So I probably didn't try with the exam. Because, I'm not going to go there. And you don't try.
Oh. Any school teachers in your memory that influenced your life in any way?
Well, mainly all were from the First World War. And they all had deformities of some sort. One had an arm he couldn't use. The other fella had one lung. They all seemed to have some deformity. But they were all very good. And in the top class, there was a fella called Askew, who became headmaster of the school. Gar, she used a nickname after some character in a newspaper, I think. They'll say, oh, you're in Gosh's class. And Gosh, if you weren't a 10, he'd throw chalk at you. Boy, there, and throw the chalk. And so he'd have this like a big ruler. And he'd say, I'll fell you with this bally chair leg if you don't pay attention. And I got a reference from him when I left school. Give me a good reference, any rate.
What was the discipline in the school for people who did misbehave?
Well, it was the cane. And there was very little used because they were frightened of it. They didn't like it. And it kept order. And the cane was always on the desk in view. But I can't remember any disorder at all, really. I seem to have good control.
Were you taught at home and school to respect your elders?
Yes, you were. They'll say, now that's your aunt, and address her as aunt. Don't say, hey, you know, say aunt, and so and so. Oh, yes, they were pretty strict on that. And all people respect them, you know. Oh, yeah.
Growing up, as you got older, to teenage, did your leisure activities change at that time?
Yes, well, I've always been inclined towards the sea. And instead, I used to drift down to the North Dock and watch the ships coming in and out, which was fairly regular in those days in Sunderland. A lot of coastal traffic, of course. Because in those days, there was about 27 pilots employed, which showed the activity on the river at that time. I think now there's three. That's how things have deteriorated. And I used to spend a lot of time down there and got to know the men that had the boats, learned to scull a boat down there, so these men, helped them to repair their boats, put planks in and nail them up, and jobs like that. And I watched a man build a boat from scratch. He was I don't know whether he was a French polisher, but he was out of work. And he said to me one day, well, you saw I'll meet this old fella. Well, he wasn't old, but he was old to us. And then actually he got a recommendation for bravery. Three times he dove in and pulled men, boys, out the water that fell in the dock. Because at one stage a policeman came to my door, and of course there was panic if a policeman came to your door. You know, he must be a bad boy. So mother answered the door. Mother was partly deaf, actually. And says, what's the problem? She says, we want to see you a son. Is what it's about. She says, well, he says, well, it's nothing serious, but he was a witness to Mr. Taylor jumping in the dock to save this boy, and we just want to know what actually happened. So that's what it was all about. So I saw this policeman, and he asked me questions, and he says, did you think it was dangerous? I always remember this bit. I said it was, because there was a lot of boats moored, and there was ropes in the water, he could have fouled with them. And they took all this down, and he got a Royal Humane Society vellum. But that was his third rescue. Well, he built this boat from scratch, and he built it out of mahogany, which was unusual, and it was a cobble. And all the critics down there said, nobody can build a cobble properly. There's always faults. It's down by the head. It's got a list of starboard, a list of port. Doesn't float right. At any rate, we used to help them to build this boat. It was built in an allotment a bit up from the dock. It was about 20 feet long, I think, roughly. A five-oakman's cobble, actually, it was all. And he had a bandsaw driven off a petrol engine, which he'd got out of an old car and rigged up this place. And this boat was built. Then came the day when it had to float. So they had to get it out of this allotment. Everybody lent a hand to get it down. They're all painted, beautiful. They called it Stanley after him. Stanley. So they got it down the dock, and all watching, oh, it'll be no good, it'll be lopsided, it'll float this way, that way. It went in the water, and it floated perfect. It was fun. Everybody said, well, it's a first class job. And it was built out of mahogany, and I think the majority of them boats were built out of larch. Clinker built.
Your interest with the sea was basically this, because you lived near it, or you didn't have any family connections with the sea at all, or any forebears?
No. On my father's side, but not directly.
So it was just your own interest in getting involved down at
That's
the coast?
That's right. Got interested.
At what age did you leave school?
15. I stayed on a bit longer because there was no work. Normally left at 14. So I stayed on at 15, and I rather enjoyed the latter year because you were given more or less a free hand. You could do your own things. And we were making a big built-up map of the UK in sand and glue, you know, with the mountains and everything being built up and coloured. And I rather liked doing this. And I stayed on and worked a lot on this project. Then, looking for work. A job came up for a solicitor's boy for a solicitor's office. So I applied, got an interview, and Mother went along with us. I was still in short trousers. And the solicitor probably wasn't interested in that, like. So he gave me a few questions to answer. Practice. A man's got to practice, or you practice on the football fields. Write them down, you know, for spelling mistakes. So anyway, I didn't get the job. So I was out of work. Then my father knew a fella called Stothard, who had connections. He says, oh, I'll look around. So I got a job in a printing company, Bolton, Theodophilus Bolton printer. Funny name. Anyway, I worked there for a year.
What was your job there? What was your particular task?
I started off as a printer's devil. That was putting the type back in the boxes. Then I got to setting the type. Then I got to work on the machines. There were treadle machines then. And if you did colour work, you had to run one colour through, take it off, set up new colours, and gold work had to be all dusted on, gold dust. The room was covered with dust. No, they used to have a pint of milk every hour, that was the law, to wash this dust down. And if it was silver, you were covered in silver. You know, today's standards would have been fatal, fatal. Anyway, I was never interested in it, and I wanted to go to sea.
Can I just, before we go on to that, what hours did you work?
47.
And how were they organised throughout the week?
I think you did 4 hours on a Saturday. It would be 7:30 till 5 during the week, then 7:30 till 12 on a Saturday. I think it worked out at 47.
Do you recall your first pay?
As an apprentice at 16 was 5 shillings a week. And I think it would be the same in the printers. Can't remember. I know there was 5 shillings at Doxford's. And in my final year there, 21, was 18 shillings.
And you handed that money over to your mother?
That's right.
A lot. And did you get pocket money?
Yes, I got pocket money. But as a boy, we used to get a penny a week pocket money when we were going to school. And it was a penny to go to the pictures. But sometimes you could get in for a jam jar. They used to have the, if you took a pound jam jar, they let you in.
The jam jar is empty, of course.
Oh, yes, empty jam jars. And they must have sold them back to the jam firms. Went to a picture house called the Corra. Was known as the Corra de Lop. You went in with a jersey and come out with a jumper. And the ventilation system had round circular windows. There was no glass in them, but they had wood flaps. And a man used to open these big flaps with a huge pole. When it got too stuffy, you know. Silent films with a pianist playing. And the pole man that opened the windows also kept control of the children. This long pole, he could reach over the rows and bash them if they stood up and started shooting.
How far was your the printing job that you had from your home? Did you have to travel?
Yes, I bought a bicycle. Now that was very expensive. I think it was £2. And I went with the mother and father to buy this bicycle. Went to a place up in Sunderland. Couldn't ride a bicycle actually, and then wheeled it back. I used to go to work on that. And rather funny, going back to the printing side, there was a man there called Slater, Arnold Slater. He stayed on in the business, came out. The war developed, and I think before the war, he went to sea as a printer on a passenger liner. I don't know which one. But later on, his father was a signalman on the railway, and he decided to go into the signal system. So he went on the railways as a signalman. And he ended up chief station master of King's Cross with a top hat. Arnold Slater. So he did quite well.
So you said you were in this printing job about a year or so.
Yeah.
Where did you go to then?
To William Doxford. And the starting age for apprentices was 16. I just scraped in. Yeah.
What particular job was that? What work was it?
I was in the engine works, engine builders.
Ship's engines, were they?
That's right, ship's engines.
And again, what was your first task?
Filing copper, steel pipes. There was a slot along these steel pipes. And they were actually guides for a float that went up and down in this tube with an indicator on. Had to file these. Then from there you went on. Eventually you put on bonus work, piece work. You had to produce. The more you produced, the more you got paid.
Was it heavy work? Heavy physical work?
No, light work. Yeah. That was in the engine works. And later on I asked for a transfer to go out onto the fitting out quay where they installed the engine in. But I wanted to get more basic knowledge of the engine and that.
Did you have to do night classes?
Oh yes, went to night classes,
What were you studying for in the night class?
I think it was Ordinary National Certificate, which I didn't make, I didn't get it.
What hours did you work for this company?
The same hours, 47. That was the rate at that time, 47 hours a week.
How long would your apprenticeship last, or would have lasted?
5 years.
And did you do the full five?
Yeah, you had to. That's how I got the first ship. This chap came in, Dougie Parks called him, and he went to sea with Ropeners on the deck to train as a deck officer. And he found out, that his eyesight, he was colourblind, so unsuitable. So he came into Doxford to go into the engineering field. We still want to go to sea. Now he came in late. So to complete his time, he had to work till he was 22. He had to do the full 5 years. So he thought he could get away with it at 21. So at 21, he wrote to the furnace holder company and asked them if there was a vacancy. And he got the job. The company wouldn't release him. They said, you can't go, you haven't finished your time, you've got another year. So then he asked me if I would take the job, because I was looking for work, my time was up. So I took the job and went into the Duquesa, which I've told you earlier. She was eventually lost. I did one trip in her, left her, and then she was captured by the Germans.